It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, the House passes new legislation targeting anti-Semitic speech as quote-unquote hate speech. It seems that not just the left, but the right needs to be reminded that free speech is not just there for speech that you love, but that's there to protect specifically speech that you hate. Two, I've said before, there's nothing to watch. I think I've hit the bottom of the internet. Well, could that have all started with Gamergate? Could it be that everything, as diagnosed by Jerry Seinfeld, everything has become woke? What happened to entertainment? What's left to watch with one of the most prominent streamers on YouTube, Nerdrotic? And three, big game fives in Dallas. Big wins in the heart attack that is postseason hockey and the flu game that is Luka Doncic. Big night in Big D. It is the Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com, on the Fox News YouTube channel, the Fox News Facebook page, and always on demand by subscribing on Apple or Spotify, if you prefer to listen to the Will Cain podcast, or if you want to watch, you just hit subscribe on YouTube. The link is right here in the text description underneath this live stream, or you can always find it by going to YouTube/@Will Cain Show. Man, I'm looking for some consistency. You know, we've talked a lot here, often through the lens and the prism of sports, about, you know, what adds up to greatness and, you know, what makes a guy like Tom Brady, Tom Brady. And it isn't some otherworldly God-given talent. It isn't athleticism. It honestly is the consistency of discipline. And I am failing on the consistency of discipline. Man, irregular sleep, irregular exercise, irregular vices. I just need to get even. And I think, without forcing it, I think that my lack of consistency as an individual is somehow mirrored in the lack of consistency in society. One of my very good friends is in finance, and he's a value investor who looks beyond the market machinations, the swings day to day of various popular or unpopular stocks to find true value. And the idea is that over time, you know, the true underlying value of a company will be realized, but it's hard to keep up because the market swings are just so rapid. I mean, what used to be something that you would see swing over a quarter or over a couple of months is almost swinging on a day-to-day basis, on a certainly week-to-week basis. What's up? What's down? You know, it'll compel you to watch Stuart Varney on Fox Business to find out the latest swing of the day. And it's also the kind of swings that are taking place in society. It was just a week ago that we were having a conversation with liberal streamer Destiny about the embrace of free speech. And then my concern isn't simply the betrayal of the left of free speech, but that betrayal of free speech is something that is given with power, and that the right has shown no real reason to believe that free speech would be a consistent, that it is a principle. And a week later, we swing. Like my lack of discipline, like the markets, we swing violently, rapidly, extremely in a direction where now we have to talk about the right, betraying one of the foundational values of America, free speech. Let's do that with story number one. House of Representatives passed a new law. It passed with Democratic support of 133 votes against 70 votes, and Republican votes, 187 votes against 21 votes, to target anti-Semitism under the guise of hate speech. Mike Lawler, Republican congressman from New York, introduced the Columbia Act, which will create anti-Semitism monitors at select universities. The House Rules Committee advanced the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. It's a bipartisan bill to expand the definition of anti-Semitism in Title VI, federal anti-discrimination laws. This is laid out by Mike Schellenberger on Public. The bill refers to the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism. It includes criticism of Israel, such as characterizing the state of Israel as a racist endeavor or applying double standards to Israel's conducts. Also, for example, comparing Israeli policies to Nazis. Because all schools receive federal funds must comply with Title VI, the bill will lead to greater censorship of speech on campus. Now, this is the part in the conversation where everyone, you know, feels the necessity, as do I, to say something that I've been saying for the last couple of weeks. What's happening on American college campuses is ridiculous and abhorrent. Like, it's absurd what's happening on Columbia or at the University of Texas. You know, Bill Ackman, speaking of investors, Jewish, he tweeted the following. He said, the problem is not hate speech. The problem is the actions taken by protesters on these college campuses and others that are in violation of existing federal or state laws or university codes of conduct that are not enforced. We should not impair free speech. We should simply enforce the laws. As somebody pointed out, you could enforce laws against vandalism. You could enforce laws against trespassing. You can enforce laws against blocking other students from getting to campus, of violent takeovers of university buildings. There are many things you could do to push back on these ridiculous and inorganic protests taking place across America on college campuses. But limiting speech is the last thing that you want to do. And for some reason, because the pendulum swings so hard, we have to focus this now and have this conversation with the right. For years now, we have rightfully had the conversation about the betrayal of free speech on the left. Censorship, political speech censorship, you know, any speech about the war in Ukraine, any speech about COVID, using government mechanisms to inhibit free speech. And we would have been deluded to think, oh, as sold to us by Republicans, they're the true defenders of free speech. Because the minute that an issue comes up that, again, you can stand up against what's happening on college campuses without outlawing free speech. As I said at the outset, and this has always been the case, it's there designed not to protect speech you love, but to protect speech you hate. Matt Gaetz did vote against this in the House of Representatives. He said, this evening, I will vote against the ridiculous hate speech bill called the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. And he says what everyone believes. Anti-Semitism is wrong, but this legislation is written without regard to the Constitution, common sense, or even a common understanding of the meaning of the words. The gospel itself would meet the definition of anti-Semitism under the terms of the bill. The gospel? How does the gospel meet the terms? Because they're adopting the standards of the International Holocaust Remembrance. And contemporary examples, this is laid out on the page of the Holocaust Remembrance page, holocaustremembrance.com. Contemporary examples of anti-Semitism in public life, the media, schools, workplace, and the religious sphere would include, but are not limited to, here's a couple bullet points. Calling for, aiding, or justifying the killing or harming of Jews in the name of a radical ideology or an extremist view of religion. Makes sense. Accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoing committed by a single Jewish person or group, or even for acts committed by non-Jews. Denying the fact, scope, mechanisms, or intentionality of the genocide of the Jewish people at the hands of the National Socialist Germany and its supporters and accomplices during World War II. That's a free speech law that is in Europe long gone, like Holocaust denial. Again, it's so... Holocaust denial, absurd, wrong, but criminal, made illegal. This is what they do in Germany. This is not what we do in the United States, because we understand who decides what is appropriate speech. We understand it's the nose of the camel in the tent, that you outlaw one type of speech, then where does it end? It goes on and on, denying the Jewish people the right of their self-determination by claiming that the existence of the state of Israel is a racist endeavor. Applying double standards by requiring of it a behavior not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation. Can you see how that would be open to interpretation? Can you see how that would be something like, wow, is this speech now something that is hate speech in the United States that is outlawed? I mean, the founders of this country took the time when they drafted the Bill of Rights – I love the conversation of the Bill of Rights, by the way. Should we have even had a Bill of Rights? You know that conversation, right? The Bill of Rights flipped the Constitution on its head. The Constitution was designed to lay out the powers of the government, not what the government couldn't do. Well, big debate then, do we go ahead and protect certain rights? But it flipped the head. Now that we have the Bill of Rights, the presumption is, oh, the government can do anything as long as it didn't run afoul of anything laid out in the Bill of Rights. But we're long past that debate. So we have the Bill of Rights, and the first one they enshrined was the freedom of speech. I mean, this is foundational. And the fact that anti-Semitic speech is abhorrent doesn't allow us to then betray our most fundamental values. Because this isn't the end. This is the beginning. And this whole pendulum, this lack of principle, this lack of consistency has now engulfed Republicans in that, yes, we should condemn what's happening on college campuses. Yes, we should shut it down because it's gone beyond free speech. You know, when you're using force, you're taking over buildings, you're vandalizing not just buildings, but statues of George Washington now draped in Palestinian flags. You're taking down the American flag. There's plenty, not just to condemn, but to stop this absurdity. But passing a law, Republicans, passing a law, Congress, to start to limit certain areas of speech, man, this is fundamentally un-American. And it's a shame, but no surprise, that we have to not just remind the left, but we now have to remind the right. All right, what's left to watch? When did this all go bad? You know, when did we get hit the bottom of the internet? When did we have nothing left to stream? Was it Gamergate? Was that the canary in the coal mine? Is that when it started? And how did we end up here today? We're Marvel. Yeah, and we all know. Marvel's terrible now. Even my kids know it. I'm not going to watch the latest franchise. We didn't have Disney Plus anymore. So when did it all go bad? What's left to watch? Let's break it down with one of the biggest streamers on the internet, Nerdrotic. Next on The Will Cain Show.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
It feels like we were sort of in a golden age of entertainment. It was almost too much to watch. And then almost it felt like overnight, everything turned to crap. Let's discover why. Let's discuss what happened with Nerdrotic. Now on The Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com, on the Fox News YouTube channel. It's also on the Fox News Facebook page. Hit subscribe, and you can watch any of our, for example, debates. Earlier this week, by the way, with Rebecca Heinrichs of the Hudson Institute over the war in Ukraine, responding to our conversation, debate with David Sacks, former COO of PayPal over the war in Ukraine, or a debate with liberal streamer Destiny from a week ago. Just hit subscribe right now on YouTube. Here's a comment. Sarah Gold, by the way, you comment, we'll interact with you. We want to hear your comments. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Gary's going mainstream now. So Gary Beekler is also Nerdrotic. He's one of the biggest streamers on YouTube across the internet. He's got well over a million subscribers. He reviews pop culture. He reviews gaming and entertainment. And he's been doing it for quite some time. Gary, I don't know. This is you going mainstream. This might be me going mainstream on YouTube.
Oh, I don't know about that. I just went to Vegas. I put on a couple pounds, so that's the only bigger I feel right now. But yeah, I spent, and anybody who watches me knows I'm a huge gaming fan, massive gamer, play all the time. Uh-huh. No, you were talking earlier about like where all this started. And as far as the customer movement, I hate the word consumer, it really did start with Gamergate, right? Gamergate has some very nefarious origins that we don't need to get into, but ultimately it was a customer movement. It was fans going, you know, I've loved this stuff for so long and something feels a little off. All of a sudden you hate us. And the royal you here is the gaming industry and some of the designers and mostly the journalism. Entertainment journalism has been a poison, has been cancer to fandom for well over a decade now, when it used to be just, hey, let's review a game or let's review a movie or a comic book. And then it became, well, you know, the biggest problem here is the fans, obviously, the toxic fans.
Yeah. You know what actually that makes me think immediately, Gary? So before I was at Fox, I don't know how familiar you are with me or my career, and I don't assume that you need to be or are, but I was in sports for like, you know, 5 years. I was at ESPN, and I had the Will Cain show on ESPN, and I don't know that I rationalized an analogy to what you just described in gaming, but I could instinctively feel this. I came at sports from the prism of a fan. Look, I wasn't a pro athlete, and I wasn't a sports journalist. And one of the things I noticed was the antipathy towards the fan in sports. It's like, you know, everything became an attack on the fan. And before you know it, every fan playing the circle game became making a white supremacist symbol, right? And then every fan's a racist. It felt like the sports journalists who hated the people that are actually, as you point out, the customers of the entire business, the entire model of sports. And I wanted to center my show on like, hey, like I love fans. Like fans are what makes this thing go around, not just like from a business standpoint, but from a passion standpoint. Like I'm a passionate fan. And why do you hate the passionate fan of sports? It's fascinating that journalism did the same thing in gaming.
Journalism recognized early that the fan was eventually, whether it was subliminal or not, the fan was eventually going to become their competition because, thanks to social media, good or bad, we're more connected now than ever, and our opinions are out there, right or wrong, and so many of us are not afraid to give them now, and that really bothers creatives, and that really bothers the journalists who had power, had a lot of power over the creatives. The creatives basically had to go to them to get their thing pushed out, and it was a very symbiotic relationship for a long time. I use the term shill because that's mostly what they were. We weren't getting honest opinions pretty much ever, right? And then when guys like myself or my friend Jeremy from Geeks and Gamers or all my co-hosts on Friday Night Tights were just guys in our rooms filled with way too many toys, just expressing our opinions, going, you know, like, we used to really love this stuff. We want to still love this stuff. And all we were met with every time we legitimate criticisms, by the way, we might flare it with a little comedy or failed comedy in my case, but it was honest. It was authentic. And that's the one thing Hollywood's having a hard time dealing with. The AAA gaming companies are having a hard time dealing with. And media overall is having a hard time dealing with is authenticity. And that's what people are looking for in art, in criticism, and just basic opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I want to come back to the gaming foundations of this for a moment, but I want to kind of set up, see if you accept my premise that I said before you came in. I'll say this as someone who wasn't coming at it from a critical standpoint. I was just a consumer or a customer, right? It did feel, at least in pop culture, like we were a little bit in a golden age, right? Especially mm-hmm. in television. So, in the 90s, I would say movies were the thing. And I don't know if we were in a golden age of movies or not, but it felt like I used to go to the movies all the time. Now I never go to the movies. But it transitioned to television. And it felt like we always had something good to watch there for about a 10, maybe even a 15-year period. Like from The Sopranos to The Wire to Breaking Bad to whatever, it was always something good going on. But the reason I want you to check that premise is that was also a world that predated sort of the fan-driven feedback on those things. Like, it was before social media, you know, mid-2000s, because, you know, whatever, Twitter takes off in like 2009, 10, YouTube a little before that probably. Do you think I was deluded during that period that it was a golden age? Or was it truly a golden age, and for some reason, even though they still had the journalist gatekeepers, they were making better content?
It was a golden age, and it was the end of the golden age. I mean, there's been forums going back 20 years, and that's where fandom had been relegated to. And fandom, particularly with fandom, not just, you know, with shows, general audience shows, that was very niche. That's kind of where it needed to stay. But yeah, we had a brilliant run of HBO shows, premium format shows, and that was supposed to be the future. That really was. And that ended 2015, 2016. Now, we can all assume what happened that year when Hollywood went crazy, but that's where they really put their foot on the gas pedal on woke Hollywood, driving in the message, and that's where we started hearing, insert here theory, CRT or alphabet theory, as I call it, and that's that's really where it started getting pushed. I mean, it had its origins earlier, but no, we were just getting good normal shows because there was talented people creating them. And what Hollywood has done and what gaming has tried to do but can't, and definitely comics, nobody reads comics anymore, is they've pushed out all the talented people with diversity hires. And now we have a bunch of inexperienced, untalented people who are completely, who are in, I say in Hollywood, you know, directors are cast now. They're not hired, they're cast. And shows are produced, they're not created anymore. And that's the problem. There's too many cooks in the kitchen, way too many producers, there's too many rules, there's a slavish adherence to, now it's a contractual adherence to the message that has absolutely destroyed art. You know, Jerry, we'll probably talk about that. Jerry Seinfeld broke that down perfectly recently again. And this is not an old argument.
Yeah, let's talk about Jerry Seinfeld. So I'm always like, I asked you to check my premises. I always like to like push back on myself. Like, okay, if I hear something I really like and I tend to agree with, then I kind of almost want to play devil's advocate with myself. Okay, are you sure you got this right? So I hear Jerry Seinfeld say, you know, the problem with comedy is it's all run by a boardroom now, and the boardroom is run by a mentality, like you just said, not just a mentality, but like we got to check the DEI boxes. We got to ensure that the comedy passes the doesn't offend the wrong people test. And I hear all that, and I'm like, yeah, that's absolutely true. But then pushing back on myself, Gary, I say, well, what about South Park? What about Curb Your Enthusiasm? Not politically correct. And I think that Jerry did go on in that interview to say that Larry David was grandfathered in to that, and so would South Park have been. But what about, and maybe the same could be said for Mostly Sunny in Philadelphia. It's been around long enough to have survived this shift in entertainment. But I know I saw Shane Gillis I think he's getting a new deal, right? A new show or something like that. He's sort of been embraced. And as entertainment fractures and you have different outlets, I just wonder if it's true. Maybe is Jerry just talking about like ABC, CBS, and NBC and networks? Or now that we have so many different outlets, are we actually still capable of getting that stuff just more in fractured places?
Yeah, it's being decentralized. What Jerry says in he's had two articles come out, but what he says in one of them is, you know, stand-up comedy. Comedy's still alive. It's still thriving, but it's thriving in stand-up because you have no middlemen. The audience is right there, and if you screw up, you know right away. And that's what more people, that's authenticity is the currency of the future. That's what more people are looking for. You've got a chat going right now that you're interacting with. That's what people are moving to. But comedy, what Jeremy is, why do I keep saying Jeremy? Jeremy's going to laugh, my friend Jeremy. Jerry Seinfeld said, basically, it's dead in Hollywood. It's dead in Hollywood. If you go back and look at the rated R comedy, the last one, we just had Anyone But You, right? Really mid comedy, made over $200 million. Mm-hmm. That was the first rated R comedy to make over $200 million since 2016. And by the way, that comedy was Bridget Jones' Baby, to make you even more depressed. But we don't get The Hangover anymore. We don't get Dodgeball.
I saw it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we don't
I saw Anyone But You on an airplane. And I'm curious it's not good. It's not good. But, you know, I do think, like, for a lot of guys who probably, you and I probably have some very similar views on a lot of things. Like, Sydney Sweeney has been adopted, and she definitely has her assets. But Sydney Sweeney has been adopted as this, like, anti-woke thing. And then there was that producer who was like, I don't get the Sydney Sweeney thing. She's not a good actress and all that. I mean, Anything But You is not going to be Sydney Sweeney's nomination into, no, I'm actually really good. Check this movie out.
No. She has become a huge star off of a massive flop, Madam Web, and her attitude after it, which was really good. And she's really hot. And yes, I can think of a couple of reasons why Anyone But You did well. But other than that, it was a complete fantasy. For one, it's all centered around a lesbian destination wedding. So the fact that they stayed together that long was the joke of the film. But I think it's great that I've been putting her on my thumbnails. What the hell? It works. You know, no shame to my game, but I think it's just people want, you know, we need to like stop hot phobia. My friend Chris Gore coined that term, stop hot phobia. We've had this, especially in video games, they're trying to make everybody ugly. It's like, bring back hot women. It's a good thing. Makes people happy, men and women.
Well, and if we're being authentic to your point, I mean, that's why I watched, and that's why I stuck around for 2 hours. It's a lot of Sydney Sweeney, and, you know, it keeps your attention. So, yeah. So back to Jerry Seinfeld, though. You think, are we seeing a market correction, though? So you say stand-up is a way for the talented person to reach directly to the audience and not have it be filtered through a boardroom, right? Do you think those other examples that I gave are all just grandfathered into what happened? Always Sunny, Curb Your Enthusiasm, South Park, they're just grandfathered in. Will we ever see another one? Now that we have so many options in terms of distribution, there's more boardrooms, but with more boardrooms, you presumably have more opportunity for better boardrooms, right? So will we see more of those types of shows?
I don't think so. I think they Jerry even talks about this in a later in the interview, that he says Curb was grandfathered in, and absolutely South Park was grandfathered in. Always Sunny, brilliant show, grandfathered in. But these are all shows in like multiple seasons. I think Always Sunny is going to be up to 18 at some point. South Park is at 26. And if you go back and look, what dominated streaming last year? Shows that were over a decade old, Suits, like, ruled the summer. And also on that list, there's a top 10 list with like one new show, and you see older comedies, including Seinfeld. So there's still an audience for it, to answer for it. There's still an audience for superhero movies. There's still an audience for movies. There's still an audience for comedy, and they're just finding other places for it. Like you said, it's fracturing, and that's good. We need entertainment completely decentralized. I'm all for it. That's why, again, like, some of the most interesting things happening right now are in stand-up comedy, and most people aren't seeing it because, you'll have to go. I was privileged enough to pay a lot of money, overpay for a ticket to go see the opening of The Mothership, Joe Rogan's The Mothership in Austin. And I got to see Joe Rogan, Dave Chappelle, and it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. So I think comedy is, it's a sign that Hollywood is dying, because they have completely abandoned the right one thing that they were built on. Their first movie star was Chaplin, technically. And comedy is the one thing that pushes the boundaries, that puts a mirror to society and to Hollywood. And, you know, unfortunately, all Hollywood wants to do it, you know, like, I'm fine with them putting a mirror to society, but right now they're putting like a lens to society. And they always bring up that term lens. And it really comes from one source, and it's getting tiresome. And there's this huge divide between the audience and corporate Hollywood, corporate gaming, corporate comics, corporate news, everything right now. And they're going to have a hard time dealing with it as we can talk to each other more.
Well, look, I take a huge amount of inspiration. The person that jokes that, you know, Gary's going mainstream. I mean, I work for Fox. But I take a huge amount of inspiration from you, and even though I totally disagree with him on something like a streamer like Destiny, because, and I can't speak to every opinion and I can't speak to every show and everyone, but there is a sense of authenticity, a lack of polish. You know, the comments are coming in right now and I want to interact with them. And that's my goal for this show. It was when I had that radio show on ESPN. It's just like, I don't want to speak down and at people. I want to speak with people, right? And, but I need you to do something for me. So, like, I'm not a gamer. I'm like every kid. I played Tecmo Bowl. I played Madden. I played everything, you know, NHL hockey through the 90s. But I never was into fantasy games. I think I played James Bond for some first-person shooter back in the day a little bit. But you know what I liked about that game? Gary, I liked that my buddies and I could all get in a room together and then trash talk each other and do that and compete against each other. So we never moved to sort of the online. Oh, I did Call of Duty for a little bit. But we talked about this shift from the golden age to where we got. And you pinpointed like 14, 15. And that is like the rough timeline of Gamergate. So what I'm getting at with my lack of knowledge when it comes to gaming is I'm not all the way plugged in on Gamergate. But it does seem to have been the canary in the coal mine of everything that then unfolded after that. Can you just give me the cliff notes on it? I know you could do not just a show, but you could do, and you have done, episodic seasons on Gamergate. But can you give me the cliff notes of what went down?
Well, I'm not a massive gamer either, but I am a massive nerd, and most of my friends are. So Gamergate starts with a woman who slept with a few journalists to get some positive reviews. That's pretty much it. But it turns into there is a lot of intersectionality invading games. And it really sparked a whole cottage industry on YouTube. And it really sparked this criticism of calling out woke culture. Wasn't really even called that back then. Maybe it was. This is before my time on YouTube. Then it kind of dies out because a lot of the voices in there either fade away or they turned it out to be a bunch of frauds. There's still a lot that are still around. There's Razor Fist. There's Sargon. There's a lot of guys who are still around right now. The people spearheading it now, I would say my friend Jeremy from Geeks and Gamers, Cabrutus, Rums out there on Twitter. But so it bled into comic books and then sci-fi and fantasy books. This is the one that's lesser known. It was called the Sad Puppies Incident, and it was basically a bunch of cultural Marxists invading sci-fi and fantasy and taking over the awards and only and not awarding anybody who doesn't have the politics. And it's way deeper than that. Again, in comic books, it turned into we needed half the industry needed to employ women because of a 2014 Facebook poll that said that, hey, women are interested in comics too. Half the population is a potential customer. Wow, great science right there. So they decided to get rid of all the old guys, bring in a bunch of girls who didn't know anything about comics and dudes too, and completely destroyed mainstream comics to the point where manga is absolutely dominating them. And then, you know, it started creeping in the movies as well. And I think the two best examples are Disney Star Wars, which I would argue has never been good. And Disney Marvel, which was great, which was the greatest franchise of all time, did something that will never be done again, had 20 plus movies that were varying degrees of mid to really good. You know, a couple stinkers, but like I would watch the stinkers over anything we've got post Endgame. And over the last 5 years, especially with Star Wars, anything associated with Disney, we've seen this steep decline because it's turned into product. And the fans were calling it out. The fans were calling it out with comics. The fans were calling it out with gaming. So the fans were calling out in sci-fi. And they were all being met with the same responses. You're a racist. You're a bigot. You're a white supremacist. You're a misogynist. Blah, 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 blah. Right? And then about 5 years later, after Endgame ends, it turns out, wow, gaming did go woke. Comics did go woke. And guess what? It all turned to crap. You know, look at the steep decline. Even right after Spider-Man No Way Home, we had Doctor Strange Mom made almost $1 billion. The last movie they just released, The Marvels, just made $206 million worldwide. That's a pretty quick decline. And it's not the fans' fault. It's the quality. So it's getting old, for over a decade. And as far as Hollywood is concerned, we're in post-apocalyptic woke Hollywood. As far as gaming, it's ramped up there because they've already destroyed Hollywood comics and everything else. They have nowhere else to go. Just to wrap this up, sorry, I went a little long, but with Gamergate 2.0,
no, it's cool.
which started last year. Arguably, my friend Az from Heel versus Babyface had a Starfield rant about pronouns that went mega viral. And that really kind of ramped things up. And people started looking into things. Cabrutus on Steam created this aggregate, which is the Sweet Baby Ink Detector. Sweet Baby Ink is a third-party company that basically goes over your story and makes it woke. You know? It's a giant grift. Yes. So, I mean, that's putting it in very simplest terms, but they help write your story so you can put in underrepresented, marginalized groups. It basically makes women fat, ugly lesbians in most of the games. We just assume they're lesbians. We don't know all the time. They're the ones who always, you know, put compelled pronouns, or even the fact that there's pronouns there when you're playing a video game. And yeah, gamers are sick of it, but they're failing. And there's a lot more companies and there's a lot more to it, but they're failing because gaming is decentralized. So they can go and do it on the AAA games all they want. So this is where gamers are completely winning. So now it's ramped up crazy. It is Gamergate 2 is getting as crazy, if not crazier, than Gamergate 1, because for one, the gamers are winning, and the gaming journalism is just so bad right now that they're desperate for attention. And it's almost like their old trick of stirring things up and gaslighting isn't even working anymore. You know, and when we have editors from Kotaku, you know, who have OnlyFans trying to, you know, call people up. Stellar Blade's the latest one, which is nuts. It's got just this really voluptuous, hot woman, and it's a good game. So you have a female lead and a good game, and now the journalists are complaining about it when they were calling us the misogynists, you know, just because we enjoy the female form, you know? As it should be.
The parallels ridiculous. To sports are, they're really, really interesting. So I think you brought up cultural Marxism, and that's a thing, and we've talked about it a lot right here. It's an ideologically driven thing that has populated corporations. There's also something more shallow at play, because I don't think every single person participating in this understands. They may be inadvertently participating in cultural Marxism, but they're certainly not going home saying, you know what we need to do tomorrow. There's also this mentality of we've got to be everything to everybody. So what happened in sports is real similar to what you said. Hey, you know, we've got a lot of women fans that like football, and we should grow it. You know, we should grow that. So we start leaning into different things in sports to attract women to sports. Okay, on the surface, that's fine. And the risk of making them all mad, this was kind of my thing with Taylor Swift. Like, Taylor Swift being forced into the NFL entertainment ecosystem, the problem isn't really Taylor Swift. It's that you're just trying to be everything to everybody. And when you try to be everything to everybody, you alienate the core audience that was there in the first place. You lose who you are. So to be real, your average hardcore NFL fan doesn't need 10 shots of Taylor Swift during a game. We don't need that storyline. We don't need all of that. And if you make us think that that's the most important thing happening around the game, then you alienate us while you attempt to attract everybody into the tent. And you could see the same thing on the homepage of ESPN.com. It's like, oh, you like NBA? Here's some WNBA shoved right at your throat. You know, you like the NCAA tournament? I've got 10 headlines for you on the women's tournament. And it's just like, you're just shoving things at me that don't reflect the reason I'm here in the first place, my fandom. And forget about reflect. You've minimized the reason I'm here. Or in worst cases, you've patronized or villainized the reason I'm here, to your point earlier of I'm a villain, or I'm bigoted, or I'm small-minded. Maybe so, but I did want to watch some dudes. I did want to have a beer and watch some dudes compete to win a game. That was why I came.
Yeah, and have fun. What's the common denominator here, by the way? Marvel, Disney, ESPN. Oh, it's Disney. It's happened everywhere. I mean, it's... When beer goes woke, like, it's getting a little out of control, don't you think?
Yeah.
I used to be a massive football fan. I used to watch ESPN all the time. Now, it wasn't going woke because I'm a Charger fan. I'm a San Diego Charger fan. And I hate Dean Spanos because he ripped my team out of my city. But I don't watch a single second of football now. I don't miss it at all. I like having my Sundays free. But that's what this... That's what this takeover does. It makes you hate what you loved. These things I loved. I love Star Wars. Right. I love Star Trek. I love Doctor Who. I love Marvel Comics. I like all the old stuff. I don't want anything to do with the new stuff anymore. And to make a comic collector of over 40 years quit collecting comics, new comics, that is a testament to your commitment to failure. Thankfully, the only reason it won't work in gaming, again, is because it's such a massive industry. It's spread around the world, and that's what needs to happen. If any of this is going to survive, if any movies or TV films, and they will, by the way, It's going to have to be decentralized, and Americans will probably have to change their tastes and start watching more Eastern entertainment and stuff. And some of it's pretty damn good, you know? So it'll always be there. I don't know if Hollywood will be.
I want to come back to that so we can end on a positive note. But one more thing on this, like, again, because my prism of gaming, and I know we're not exclusively focused on gaming, it's more about as an illustration. Yeah. My sons play, you know, they're big into soccer and they play FIFA mostly. And I know, you see what FIFA has done? So they, you know, they have player ratings, right? And so Messi is a high, you know, he's in the 90s. And, you know, if you draft but if you play with a team in the MLS, your ratings are like in the 60s. Right? It's just not as good. So they're balancing skill and it's complicated, like in a good way. Like this guy has speed, this guy has touch, right? And so a lot goes into, and the players care about their ratings just like they do in Madden or NBA 2K. Well, no one would pick the women's teams, right? Because the ratings are like in the 50s. So you never want to play with a woman's team, maybe at best 50s. So they normalize the ratings. So now, like, the best women's teams have ratings in the 80s and 90s. And now I've seen my son go, should we play with the U.S. women's national team against, you know, Manchester City? I'm like, why would we do that? You know, and he's like, well, look at the ratings. And so it's like forcing me in a really fake way to choose to play with women when it's not reflective at all. Sports is not fantasy. I mean, it is to some degree. But the reason I choose one team versus another is because the skill set over here is better than the skill set over there, and it's what I actually see take place on TV. It's not so I can, like, oh, make the U.S. Or make, I don't even know the names of the women's soccer teams in the U.S., but so I can make them, you know, win the Champions League. I think this is what's happening, what you've described here. I think it's what's happening with FIFA.
Women can't describe any soccer team or doesn't. They don't know any names of any soccer teams, women's soccer teams in the U.S. Did you see that MLB trailer where they have women playing baseball? We reacted to that. That was
I heard about it.
That was funny. God. Yes, they're forcing it. And it is becoming fantasy, which just, as you said, just completely destroys the entire concept of sports. The authenticity, the reality of it. Not knowing what's going to happen, you know, gaming is what they're hyper focused on. And it's going to be in the conversation for easily another year because as more, you know, gamers do not mess with gamers. They have a lot of time on their hands. They'll weaponize their autism.
Isn't gaming?
And they will find stuff. And they have, and it's been great. It's been absolutely great. Do not mess with that. It's, you know, we saw the fandom starting to fight back early on with, like, Rings of Power when that terrible show came out. The Tolkien fandom, like, said, no way. We're not putting up with this. And that was great to see. And now we're seeing, you know, there's so much clapback. You know, the Mufasa trailer just got ratioed on YouTube, which was hilarious. But, like,
I saw you posting that.
Gamers are a different beast that are not to be messed with, and it's going to be great. I'm actually, it's been a lot of fun to watch. It's been a lot of fun to watch them fight back and save their hobby and find other, you know, for one, they don't need AAA at all. Not at all. There'll be enough independent games to where either these, corporations just don't change on a dime. So you're seeing a lot of games bury smaller companies, and maybe that finally buries a corporation or it makes its conglomerate give up on it. I don't know, but I think the fans are going to win this one ultimately.
Well, to your point of gaming, I believe I have the stats right. It's bigger than the movie, music, and something else. It could be sports. I don't know. Not sports, I don't think. Industries combined. Like, it's huge. People our age, Gary, who aren't into gaming don't appreciate how huge that market is. So here's the positive note I want to end on with you really quickly. I said this on my show last week. Like, I feel like I've watched everything. I haven't, but I don't have anything anymore that I want to watch. So I'm going to lean on you to tell me what I'm missing out there that I need to put on the my list to watch. Just give me two or three, like, things. I saw you tweeting about Rebel Moon. I think it was negative, which I didn't
it's
watch.
Horrible.
I watched
don't
Doom
watch
1.
Rebel
I didn't
Moon.
Watch
go
Doom
watch,
2.
Go mow your horrible. Lawn or something. get an early start your taxes early. No. Okay. What is good that I have seen right now. The Gentlemen is the best show I've seen in a long time. That is on Netflix. It's from Guy Ritchie, and it's better than any of the movies put out the last couple of years. It feels very Guy Ritchie. It is great. Shogun, very good.
Yep.
Very good. I won't say great. I'll say very good. House of the Dragon season 2 is just around the corner. I loved House of the Dragon season 1, and I hated the end of Game of Thrones. I thought season 8 was some of the worst television, the worst dive of a television show of all time, and I think it's a miracle that they came back and did something that could end up arguably being better. War of the Rohirrimmen, an anime Lord of the Rings film, is coming out at the end of the year. And of course, there's Deadpool and Wolverine. That'll probably be pretty good. So there's some good stuff.
All right. So I saw House of Dragon 1, loved it. So I'll be in on House of Dragon 2. I watched The Gentlemen. Really fun. I like Guy Ritchie stuff. I enjoyed that. I haven't seen Shogun. So the new one there for me is Shogun to check out. And I'll be checking out your reviews, man. Nerdrotic on YouTube. Huge. Yeah, a huge audience. Over 1 million. Man, I really appreciate you giving me so much time today. It's been fun to get to know you and have this conversation. Thank you.
It was great to talk to you. Take care.
Right, there he goes. Okay, Gary Beekler, also known as Nerdrotic. This is from Lod689. Will Kane does a great job. This should be good, that conversation, going into that conversation. Ha. Das Hippo. I always got to be a little careful. I read the name slowly. We respect you representing us, bro. We know it ain't your niche. Nah, it's not my niche, but the point of the conversation is it's not just niched into gaming, though, right? It's the entire pop culture. You know, it's all of entertainment, as we talked about. It's not. It's movies. I think it's music. It's sports. Coop says, could they make All in the Family or Archie Bunker today? Well, Jerry Seinfeld says, no way. They never could. They never could. All right, coming up, as opposed to Gary, as a person to Nerdrotic, I'm not out on sports. And I had a big night last night, a doubleheader for me. Big night and big day. Here's the question, really, honestly, after watching Luca. If you and I weren't feeling great, and I've never done this, and we did a big IV injection of B12, can we conquer the world? Because it sure seems that way with Luca. Next on The Will Kane Show. It's the Will Kane Show, streaming live at foxnews.com, Fox News YouTube channel, and the Fox News Facebook page. Hit subscribe, please, Apple, Spotify, or on YouTube while you're here. Appreciate all the fans of Nerdrotic who jumped into the comments section. So I can't get right, can't get even. And I think there's a lot going into this. So 2 days, Young Establishment James. I don't know if Tinfoil Pat can hop on as well. You know what I got going on? I started the show talking about consistency, you know? And the pendulum swinging societally, culturally, market-wise, and then me as a person. So I had a sports doubleheader last night. And I'm going to be real, you know, because like Nerdrotic said, you got to be real. I had 2 tequilas, and I had a big night ahead of me, so why not, right?
Why not?
And I've really gotten away. I've gotten away from having weeknight drinks. I've really gotten away from it, and I appreciate that about myself. Because of that, I'm uneven, and then I'm trying to balance it out with, you know, Zen throughout the morning, and, you know, staying up till midnight to watch the Mavericks, and it's only compounded by the fact that sports hockey playoffs is like a 2-hour heart attack. It is literally on the edge of heart palpitations, impending doom at all times. No flow, by the way. Well, very little flow. Little bit of flow. You know, in basketball, you can kind of see which way it's going and settle into the flow. Not in hockey, man. You cannot relax. It's 2 hours of special teams in the NFL. And I feel like I survive a heart attack the whole time.
No, it's so true. And as a Ranger fan, too, it's been especially tough for me. I'm going through the same thing. I only allow myself maybe weekend beers if they're playing on a Sunday even. That's a little bit of a stretch, but it's very stressful watching hockey, especially the playoffs now.
Establishment James, was your comment, Did you just give me a as your comment?
No, I just kind of tend to make noises throughout the day, but my my heart rate was below 50.
I've told you to tighten it up.
Mm-hmm.
I told you to tighten it up. You know, fewer monologues from young establishment James, but I didn't know it was going to be reduced to a hump in response to my comment.
My heart rate was below 50 the entire Celtics series, so I can't relate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, here's my hot take. Playoff hockey, better than playoff basketball.
Agreed.
It's and I would never 100%. Say that hockey is above basketball on my sports ranking charts. Like, if I'm being real, my sports ranking chart is football, both college and pro. Then soccer. Love me some soccer. Watch Champions League, watch Premier League. And then NBA. Well, no, Major League Baseball because the Rangers is up there. And then NBA. And hockey would come in last normally. But playoff hockey skyrockets up the rankings. Skyrockets.
What's your case for soccer and the excitement of it? I know you recently got into it, I think you said. What, like, make a little quick elevator pitch case for it.
Okay, it's not, I mean, recent. I'm 10 years into my soccer fandom.
All right.
The reason why is my sons. That's that's the first prism. They start playing soccer. I start caring about it more. They pick a team to root for, so I pick a team, same one, and we have that thing together. So that's number one, okay? Then I start learning about the game and appreciating it and what they're actually doing. And here's my case. I've told you this before. This will transition us to the Mavericks as well. I love Luka, not just because he's a Maverick. I love, my favorite thing in sports is the brain. It's not athleticism. I do not like get huge. I don't. Ja Morant, who's amazing, you know, doesn't do it for me in the same way that Luka does it for me, because I love seeing somebody see an entire field of play and make plays for others or himself based upon understanding, you know, the way the game works and geometry, basically. So soccer is all about that. Like, one dude is not going to dribble through 11 guys. You're not. The closest you get is Messi. The closest you get is Messi to just like making five guys look stupid. So if you watch a team in soccer, what looks boring to someone who doesn't ever watch it much, oh, they're bouncing it back and forth. It's not progressing.
Scoring wise,
if you start to understand what they're doing and work. What's that?
Scoring wise, it's low. It's low scoring. Kind of like hockey, but you know.
It is, and it could benefit from that. But if you start understanding the way they're setting up teams to break them down and like open up passing lanes, and then you see a guy like Kevin De Bruyne, who seems to have eyes all around his head and be a time traveler who lives 3 seconds in the future, he sees things that aren't going to happen yet and can deliver these balls. I love it. It's just something about it. And it is opposite hockey, whereas hockey is a constant heart attack. You can relax a little bit while watching soccer. And so I love that on Saturday mornings or something like that, just relax, have a cup of coffee, and watch this game unfold.
Cup of coffee.
So that's my pitch to you.
Maybe a beer. That's the best thing about it is you could, you know, on a Saturday morning, you just have a beer. And it's a great excuse to do so because of the hours.
It's a good pub activity.
But it's sports variety. So you might do that. You do that with all your nighttime sports, right?
True.
You don't have morning sports, except now you have soccer. True. And you have some variety. You're like, oh, I'm going to have, you know, coffee and wake up on my day. Which brings me to Luka, talking about the Mavericks last night. Blew out the Clippers in Game 5. Stars won Game 5. Mavericks won Game 5. And Luka went off for like 35 points. Almost a triple-double again. But the story is he's sick, right? I don't know if he got a bunch of Mucinex or what he got. But I'm pretty sure he got a B12 injection. So the question is, I've never had one of these things. Like, if you and I are sick... Like, James called out the other day, and I think it's very suspect of what his sickness was. Very suspect.
Still got some work done.
It was a one-day sickness. One-day sicknesses are very suspect.
I've had the wine flu before, just once or twice.
I don't think I've actually ever been sick.
So, you called in sick. So the question is, if we're such weenies about it, why can Luka go out and do that when he's sick? Are these B12 injections, are these performance-enhancing drugs that are legalized?
I think it is, because I've heard this from people. I worked in sports media like yourself, and people talk, and it's kind of like someone said it's like the adrenaline that just gets stuck in your chest, like in Pulp Fiction, and it just gives you this like massive surge, like Mariah Carey has to sing tonight no matter what kind of drug. You know, it's that kind of thing. And it just gets you through what you have to do, and then you sleep later. And especially in a playoff game, you just have to get through it. You know, it's a flu game. It'll go down for the ages for Luka.
Once you're running around for 10 minutes and you have 20,000 people screaming at you, that probably does a little something to make
Absolutely.
You forget how sick you are.
Yep.
Yeah, but that wears off, and then you crash. I'm so fascinated by this B12 stuff.
Should we take
ESPN,
one?
By the way, just did a thing on sleep. Yeah, let's do it on air.
Let's all do it on air together.
Let's get a B12 IV on air.
I'm going to be running around the room.
Yes, I want to do that.
Woo! James will be insufferable over here.
ESPN just did a thing on sleep. You know all these guys, like the hockey players and NBA players, take naps, two-hour naps yep. on game day? And this guy said it's the biggest, and this is after getting a night of 10 hours sleep, right? And then they go take a two-hour nap in the day. This guy said it's the biggest legalized performance enhancer there is. That kind of sleeping.
Wow. Yeah, but that's natural.
What's wrong, tinfoil?
Listen, I think it's weak. I liked sports back when they would go out until 2 or 3 in the morning. I mean, like Gronk was the last great athlete who would, get wasted.
Oh, you want party animal.
I want party animal. I want them out. I want them smoking cigarettes.
You want Dennis Rodman's.
He didn't last.
You want Michael Jordan gambling in Vegas
too
before
much
the playoffs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I want my sports guy. I'm tired of this fine-tuned physical specimen crap.
It's a better game though with that. I think.
No, I hate it. No, it's too refined.
It's too Lindy.
It's not as fun.
There he is.
Yeah.
Wow.
There it is.
Wow.
All right, Pat. Doesn't like refinement culture. Sports is refined. Sports is too perfect. These guys are too good. I want Lynn Dawson smoking a cigarette and having a Dr. Pepper at halftime.
Darn right.
I just can't figure out if you want it to be 1950 or a dystopian future where you're a part of the resistance. I just can't figure out which one you want.
It's one of those he wants one of those steampunk future, past 1950s things where,
Yeah, I'm also all about bringing back airships. So,
yeah, there you go.
I don't know. I don't even know.
All right. Well, I want to win. So that's what I want. I want to win. And if it takes some B12 and a nap to get you to win, I'm in for that for Luka and the Mavericks and the Dallas Stars. Big night in Big D, which means my sports insomnia of the spring will go on for at least another couple of days and hopefully another couple of weeks. That's going to do it for us today here on The Will Cain Show. Please hit subscribe, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, and we'll see you again next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcast and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.